Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
It's funny that you mentioned, Kyle, that you liked the free-for-all, because I played like one round of free-for-all and I was like, this is where the sickos live, man. I'm getting out of here. Like, this is so much.
You got me. What can I say? You got me.
these Perth boys built different.
Partly because I've had a bit of a break from COD in general, that I just needed to jump in and get some really solid practice where, you know, every single corner was a potential to get absolutely blasted in the face. And but I'm happy to take that label as a sicker.
Yeah, yeah.
Sifter.com.au.
G'day, I'm Chris Button, and this is Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Death, taxes, and a new annual Call of Duty are the main constants in life. Black Ops 6 sees a return to the espionage thriller setting of the popular first-person shooter series. Does it stand out for the rest, or merely blend into the never-ending cycle of military fetishism? David Smith and Kyle Poletto are here to help me find out. First, let's check out the latest headlines on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Gianni De Giovanni.
And I'm Kyle Poletto.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 10th of November.
Nintendo confirms that the Switch 2 will be backwards compatible with existing games, but still doesn't announce the bloody thing.
Speaking of Nintendo, someone has ported Doom over to the new Nintendo Alamo.
Mass Effect TV series at Amazon is going ahead with the Fast and Furious creatives attached.
And Warcraft 2 Remaster has been leaked ahead of next week's 30th anniversary.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
Okay, so David, I'll start with you. With the two of us having played the campaign of Black Ops 6, we're so many entries deep at this point. Where does this game actually pick up from? What's the vibe? What's the plot? What's the setting? What are we going for here?
Oh, man. In terms of chronology, it's sort of more about, I guess, where it falls in a... I don't even know if there's a canonical timeline, but it falls in a timeline. The Black Ops series has always been about, like, this illusion of kind of X-Filesian conspiracy theory going on behind real world events. So this one starts in 1991, I believe, right before Bill Clinton is elected president. It's the Gulf War. Bush the first is still in charge. I don't know how much connection there is to previous games. In terms of like the Black Ops campaigns, I think I played one and two for this campaign. I was kind of pulled in by the marketing on this one. It looked very interesting. It was obviously more contemporary from a period when I was growing up and kind of becoming conscious of things that were going on in the world. Like 1991, I would have been seven, so at the very least aware of things on television, aware enough to know that there was a word pardon me, that there was a word that people kept repeating on television that was Baghdad. They kept saying words like that. So at the very least, in my mind, there is a connection to something that was going on when I was much, much younger, which I haven't had in previous games. I don't remember much of the political landscape, particularly in the US, what was feeding through to Australia at that time from much earlier than that. Like, I was born in the 80s. I don't remember any of the Reagan stuff, right? I don't remember any of the Bush years either. Moving into this campaign, it's an interesting one. Starts very much in media res. Like, you're part of a team that's crashing through the Kuwaiti oil fires. It's a really visually spectacular sequence, but it is also very Call of Duty. It's very sort of hoorah, hyper militarized, very chest thumpingly American. Like, the only good guys you encounter in this opening sequence are American, and they're all like lock and load and action heroes and all the rest of it, because these games are built on being, or these campaigns rather, are built on being blockbuster movies that you are the main star in. I still have critiques more broadly. We can talk about those as we go. But even right from the off, you can still find the same old Call of Duty campaign design, in the sense that, like, you really are an actor in a scene. If you don't do it the way the game wants you to do it, the director calls cut and you go back to your mark and you rerun the scene again. Stuff like that has been around in this series forever, and it is interesting to me that in 2024 they're still doing it. They've very much got to keep you on rails. This is still a very old school minded on rails campaign. Keep moving forward, don't stop. There's a couple of exceptions to that, we'll talk about them. I've rambled on long enough, your turn.
With the what you mentioned about it feeling like the only good guys are the Americans, I know in previous COD campaigns recently, even there was a bit of controversy. Are you telling me that they haven't learnt from any of that? There's no nuance to it.
It doesn't seem like it. No, like, I mean, it's the Gulf War, right? So, like, very much the focus of the conflict is Iraq, and there's one Iraqi in the game who appears to be someone that these characters are willing to talk to, and that guy gets shot in the head 4 minutes into the game. Like,
jeez.
It everybody else is American as hell, or either of dubious Eastern European ethnicity. They don't want to necessarily say where some of these characters are from, I don't think. It is a very late 80s, early 90s action movie type vibe. If they can come up with some nondescript Arabic people for you to shoot at, they will. And that feels like a lesson they should have learned to avoid a very long time ago. It feels passe and borderline offensive that they're still doing this, that they've still got missions where you're in helicopter gunships mowing these people down, and you get out of the helicopter at the end of the mission and they're hooting and hollering and they're cheering and they're celebrating. And it's just like, it goes unexamined. None of it is thought about for a moment. It's just like, hey, nice job. Well done on the slaughter. And it's just, if you think about it for more than 10 seconds, it really starts to feel quite ghoulish.
There's one saving grace, and of all the series, Call of Duty doesn't sort of need someone to stick up for it and defend it. But there's one thing I do find interesting in terms of a critical examination, that, yes, a lot of these Call of Duty games, and Black Ops 6 is absolutely guilty of continuing this, you know, military fetishism of, you know, we're the good guys, the people with different pigment color to us are the bad guys, et cetera, et cetera. There's one thing that I found a little bit interesting with Black Ops 6, and I think this is a little bit of a through line between the Black Ops series in general, in terms of there are some examinations of, are we the bad guys on occasion? It's very surface level and doesn't really go skin deep, but there are times where I did feel like it was, oh, we're examining the power structures in terms of, is the CIA acting in our best interest? Is the FBI acting in our best interest? Are these institutions and organizations that use, you know, pretty well violence and espionage and subterfuge as their main tools and see everything as a nail? there's a bit of examination in terms of, okay, what purpose do these bodies serve? But then, as you say, David, it is a very quick smash cut back to, okay, now we're in the Iraqi desert mowing down the locals en masse. So that's certainly a very common sort of through line throughout the series. And from a gameplay and mechanical perspective, I haven't played a Call of Duty in a few years. So coming back to Black Ops 6 has been an interesting experience, one that I've largely enjoyed. And the campaign, I thought, did some interesting things in terms of it's not just a corridor shooter after corridor shooter. There are times where there's like a semi-open world section where you get to plot out which objectives you're going to do first and how. There's also some stealth sections. There's a sort of casino heist section, which requires a little bit of Ocean's 11 stuff. So I thought it was interesting, albeit I thought sometimes it slowed the pacing down a little bit. But David, when I read your review on Patreon, there was a really interesting point that you made, and I've seen this point made elsewhere by a few other people as well, in terms of there's a section that sort of, I'm not sure if it's the right word, but japes the zombies sort of modes that the Call of Duty franchise has, you know, been so popular for, but then follows it up in a very odd sort of way. I wonder if you'd like to talk through sort of the way that it sort of tackles tone in terms of throws you into this zombie ghoulish thing, followed by more gunning down of nondescript international foes.
Yeah, so the way that the level design, the levels are strung together very curiously, as you say. Like, there's kind of classically minded Call of Duty levels where you're just charging down a corridor and taking guys down, checking corners, performing functionally as a SWAT team as you move through buildings and clear them out. There's these open world, there's levels. There's like one and a half. Of these levels where you get like a big Metal Gear Solid 5-esque patch of ground that you can cover, and there's lots of different sort of things to blow up in that level, and then it kind of lets you move on. There's the level that you were talking about with the zombies, without going into too many spoilers about it, but yeah, there's kind of a spooky level, there's a casino level. It felt a bit disjointed to me, and the reason I think the reason it felt disjointed is it feels like they might have done something similar to Titanfall 2. Titanfall 2, funnily enough, made by Respawn Entertainment, a group of people that founded Infinity Ward and made the original Call of Duty, went to make a campaign for Titanfall 2, a game that hadn't in its previous iteration had a campaign. And the way they did it was they broke down their design team into smaller pods and sent them off and said, here are the tools we have in our game. We've got shooting, we've got wall running, we've got giant robots that the player can use so you can play with scale. Think about what we've got here. Come up with some of your own stuff. Come up with the coolest level you possibly can. Come back and pitch them and we'll pick the coolest ones. And then the writers went away and sort of threaded the needle, strung those levels together into a story that worked really well. And it feels like Black Ops 6 has tried to do something similar, and I don't know if the writers are quite good enough to thread that needle quite as cleanly. That lateral move from the zombie level to the casino heist is such a tonal bat to the head. Like, I was like, are we really going to rob a bank now? Like, is that we were just in the Bureau of Control a minute ago, and now, okay, all right, sure, we're all over the place. Yeah, tonally very interesting. I like that they tried it. I think, like, if you're going to be churning these kinds of games out every year and you need a campaign every year, I think that's actually not a bad way to try and design these campaigns. Because at the very least, you're going to be throwing lots of interesting ideas into a blender and trying to pull something out. I don't know if it completely works here. Like, it's obviously worked better for some people than others. I think I'm in the minority saying that, like, I personally didn't vibe with the campaign as much as others. I've seen plenty of people say they thought this was one of the best COD campaigns in years, and fair play. Very interesting. A very interesting strategy. I think that the needle could have been threaded on that one a little bit finer.
Yeah, and I echo a lot of your thoughts there. I think I was a bit warmer on the campaign, perhaps by virtue of having not played a Call of Duty in a while and coming back to this really tightly focused shooter action that, you know, is at a quality and level of polish that is rarely seen in other games or first-person shooters, and perhaps that's what sort of carried me through. But as we know, so many people who get the annual Call of Duty releases won't touch the campaign because that's not the main draw card. The main draw card for so many people, like one Kyle Poletto, is the multiplayer. So, Kyle, I'd really love to hear, first from a gameplay and mechanical perspective, because Activision, Treyarch, Raven Software, they made a lot of song and dance about this quote-unquote omni-movement system where the movement is more finely tuned, more 360-degree sprinting, crouching, sliding, jumping, whatever. In terms of the Call of Duty's that you've played before when you've been playing through the multiplayer lobbies, how has this game felt to play to you?
Well, for some context, I hadn't played a Call of Duty for a long, long time, but got really sucked into the Battle Royale trend, you know, Fortnite into PUBG, etc. And so when Warzone came out and it was free to play, we jumped into it and I had just so much fun with it. And I thought the movement is just so, so slick. It's so fast-paced, so precise. And, you know, off the back of PUBG, which is, I think, purposefully the opposite of that, it just felt really great. So from that, I then jumped onto whatever the most recent Modern Warfare was. And again, I thought this is just incredible how smooth and slick it is. And I genuinely thought, I can't imagine how they could make it feel any smoother. But I think this omni movement, the being able to sprint in multiple directions, I haven't really played too much with the Helldivers style, you know, John Woo jumping in multiple directions mechanic of it all. But even just the omnidirectional sprinting, it's added that little extra bit of oomph in terms of the speed and the flow of the games. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, and were there any particular game modes that you were drawn to in multiplayer that you found yourself coming back to?
So again, because I haven't played the old ones, I don't know which ones are necessarily new. I really enjoy the free-for-alls, which I'm not sure if that was something that I played a lot of in the last Modern Warfare, but something really light and fun about just an absolute free-for-all, everybody against everybody in these really tight maps. As well as Kill Order, you and I jumped in a few matches of Kill Order, and that was really fun. That added element of, you know, instead of going to a set destination, you have a moving target and a moving you know, person that you have to protect. That was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, and to sort of draw that one out a little bit as well, the Kill Order is from memory, I can't remember if it's a 4v4, 6v6, one of which, two teams where one person is designated as the high-value target, and the longer they live, the more points they score. And if you take down the opposition's high-value target, you score a bunch more points, and the game keeps going until you reach 150 points, whatever the target threshold is. But every time the high-value target is taken down, another player on that team then respawns as the new target. So it sort of cycles through and they've got a little bit of a buff, so they're a little bit more powerful than the rest of the team to recognize their importance to the game mode. But it's a really satisfying push-pull mechanic and it keeps things really quick and brisk where you're always on the move. You can't afford to stay still for too long. Although some teams I came up against, they did bunker down and fought themselves really, really effectively, much to our frustration.
I had some really fun games where we found a good spot that that were easily defendable, but you know, not too much so that it became boring. And yeah, that was a really fun mode. That it's a mix of depending who is the high value target and what kind of player they are. It really diversifies the round, I think.
Yeah, so, and for someone like me who doesn't play a lot of first-person shooters, it helped me feel sort of in the match more often, so that I wasn't sort of getting taken down sort of the second I respawned. So, yeah, great for that, but quite satisfying to play. And David, as I mentioned, yeah, we played a fair bit together, including Kill Order. What was your vibe of the general multiplayer experience and what stood out to you?
Yeah, I really liked it. Kill Order was a really fun one. We did play quite a bit of that. Even in terms of just like to describe Kill Order, if you were around like I was back in the old like Quake deathmatch days, it's Protect the President. They've basically just taken the old Protect the President gameplay mode and tweaked it a little bit. They've given them that extra bit of power. Very, very cool. I like what they're doing there. Those people who bunk it up on you guys, they were playing it right. That's what you do. You find a corner and defend. Yeah, really enjoying it. It's funny that you mentioned, Kyle, that you liked the free-for-all, because I played like one round of free-for-all and I was like, this is where the sickos live, man. I'm getting out of here. Like, this is so much.
You got me. What can I say? You got me.
these Perth boys built different.
Partly because I've had a bit of a break from COD in general, that I just needed to jump in and get some really solid practice where, you know, every single corner was a potential to get absolutely blasted in the face. And I found it a really good training ground to get my skills back up to scratch before jumping into the other rounds. But I'm happy to take that label as a sicker.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing is, you know, multiplayer, there are a bunch of different game modes and a lot of them do play similarly with slight variations. But I think the common thread is that this is Call of Duty. It's a known quantity that you are going to get tight gunplay, really satisfying movement. And I'll reference, David, your review once again, a lot of this slot machine dopamine hitting sort of stuff. You know, they know how to play the right sound effects at the right time, give you the rewards at the right time to keep you playing. And some of it may feel like, you know, a little bit dirty, the way that, you know, it does feel. So I don't want to use the word addictive, but it's the only one that comes to mind. But it's that feeling where I'm enjoying this, but should I? But I think sometimes it's okay to let yourself enjoy some of these things, but sort of going back to some of the overall, a lot of the design of Call of Duty, even with the multiplayer and the copious amounts of menus, the almost altar worship of the different weapons on display, and even some of the skins you can unlock, it's quite a bizarre thing that Call of Duty has morphed into, which does feel very, I suppose, quote unquote, metaverse-like with what Fortnite and the like have done in recent years. I know Kyle and David, you've mentioned about some of the celebrities you can play as, which I don't know how to feel about that. How do we feel about, you know, rocking the likes of Nicki Minaj and whatnot as a Call of Duty playable character?
I think it's a really interesting one, and it brings up a point I wanted to make that was mentioned earlier about the American as hell of it all, and the broness, I think, too. You know, we talk about the sound effects and stuff, and they're really good, but the commentary still feels like it's being targeted at a very specific demographic that I thought that COD had broken out of. And I think having celebrities like Nicki Minaj as a playable character, not only does that acknowledge that there is, you know, an entire other gender that is playing this game now, you know, which is absolutely fantastic. But it seems to be a weird juxtaposition between acknowledging that whilst also sticking to that real gung-ho, yeah, get the job done, boys, kind of attitude. It feels a little one step forward, two steps back. I guess I'm also a little bit numb to it. You know, you just hear the absolute nonsense talk that these commentators do, and it just kind of washes over you for a bit. But every now and then it triggers something in me that I'm like, it's the lamest thing I've ever heard. Why is this still being included in these games? The demographic is surely much wider, and there's got to be some people listening to that and going, ugh, I don't know if this is for me. How do you find it, David?
The Fortnite-ification of Call of Duty for good or ill. It's interesting. Like when I was on Kotaku Australia, like whenever COD would drop one of these new celebrity skins, like Nicki Minaj, Cheech and Chong, it would go big. Like people would want to read about that. There was definitely interest in these particular people, like real world figures that were being added to the game, or even just like movie characters that were getting added to the game. In the same way that like people get excited for Fortnite skins and things like that, there's a little something extra for you to attach your own identity to there, I guess. It's also incredibly funny just to hear like Nicki Minaj talking smack in a Call of Duty match. That's extremely good. It's, you know, you become the military industrial complex, or the game fades away, I guess. Like the logging in, I played on Game Pass. We could talk about like the impact of the Game Pass will have on Call of Duty, I guess, later in this conversation. But even playing on Game Pass, you load up the Xbox app and it's plastered in Call of Duty materials. You jump into the Call of Duty app, because the way that Call of Duty has been designed these days on PC specifically, I don't know if it's the same on console, but on PC, it's very much broken down into its constituent parts, multiplayer for different games, campaigns for different games, and you download them all separately through a centralized app, essentially. Jumping into that central app also puts the sale items front and center in the biggest windows, with the actual games that you can play in much smaller ones off to the side. This is better, as former colleague Luke Plunkett reminded me, when they launched the Cheech and Chong skins for Modern Warfare 3, that whole splash page was just buy the skins. You have to go to the second page to actually play the game. So they've learned their lesson on that one for now. We'll see. But yeah, like you're very much exposed to the money-making enterprise at that point. Which, you know, Warzone launched, it is its own free-to-play platform. That is the ultimate Fortnite-ification of Call of Duty, ultimately. That's where those skins go to live. And now the yearly product is something that you play to unlock a whole bunch of stuff that you can't get in Warzone that you can now use in Warzone. You can take all of the stuff that you unlock in Black Ops 6, all the cosmetics and things like that, and take it over to Warzone and use that on your own characters over there. It's all feeding into this one it's a hydra at this point of content, just all feeding back into Warzone.
How do you feel about that bloat though? Because for me, I don't think it's as bad with this one as it was with the last Modern Warfare I played, which felt like you had to click through a bunch of different you know, season pass stuff, whatever the latest advertising thing and everything, to get to the game. I don't think they've gone, as you say, as hard with this one, but it still feels there. And like, I think it's affecting loading times. It takes me longer than it should to get into a game compared to
the load times are long, aren't they?
Any other game that I have that is just a straightforward buy the game, open the game, play the game. You know, the fact that you have to be advertised to play the game. I know it's other Call of Duty games that are being advertised, but I just want to mention that so that we don't all get too numb to it, too familiar and comfortable with this idea that to play the game you have to see all the other games available that you can play. And the overly complicated interfaces, it's all just something that feels like I would be okay with if it was a free-to-play game. Because that's how they make their money. But for a full price game, it feels icky.
It's the ultimate like having a cake and eating it too, right? Like they've got a free to play game and they're doing annual full price drops. Like that's you could consider it an expansion model, I suppose, but it's not really, is it? Like it's a full campaign that they spend hundreds of millions of dollars on. These are not cheap games with teams of thousands that make them. It's not like the World of Warcraft team pumping out another one. It's a full-scale production every year, and it all lives in service of this free-to-play monster at the center of it. Very, very interesting.
I wonder how much of Xbox, it is us being older gamers and remembering a time when it wasn't like this. And if younger gamers...
I brought up Quake like 10 minutes ago. I yearn for the Quake mines.
I wonder if younger gamers jump in and this is all they've known, is that you have to get through an absolute mess of an interface, be advertised to by a bunch of stuff, loading screens that take longer than they should just to get into one, 15-minute round of Call of Duty. If that's just, the norm now, and maybe we need
the price you pay,
accept it as we get older.
It is something that's proliferated into so many of these annual big budget releases. I mean, you look at the sports games, EA FC Sports 25, NBA 2K, all of that sort of stuff. They do all the exact same thing. And of course, it's pretty egregious and shameless the way that they do it, but they're absolute money-making machines, which is why they do it in the first place. In terms of Call of Duty specifically, just last week, I think it was, Video Game Donkey put out a very good video.
Good video. Lampooning,
very good video lampooning and parodying the
Battle.net experience.
Yeah, the utter farce of trying to do exactly what you've described, Kyle, of trying to download, install, and successfully play a game in the year 2024 from a major publisher. And it's quite the laughing stock.
It creates so many platform problems as well, because you can get Call of Duty now across so many platforms. Donkey was trying to get it on Battle.net. I played it on Game Pass for PC. You can get it on Steam. You can get it on Xbox across multiple platforms there, PlayStation as well. They're having to feed so much into this thing, get it working across all these different platforms. And you can see what happens with Battle.net that did not appear to be ready to roll with this game at all. It seemed to be grinding against it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
a challenging one.
Initially got it on Game Pass and ended up playing it on Game Pass for PC. And if I launch it from Game Pass for PC, I can play it. If I launch it from Steam, again, it launches the exact same app, which is the Call of Duty app that is on my, on my PC. But if I open it with Steam, it's like, oh, no, you can't play these. You have to buy these games. And then it tries logging in with a different account, shits itself, and decides to close. And it's just that bloat. It just seems overly complicated. There has to be easier ways to wring money out of people than this.
Every time I open a game on Steam and it launches somebody else's launcher, someone should go to jail, I think.
One thing I'd like to mention to bring things to a close is we've alluded to a little bit throughout the discussion in terms of the impact of Microsoft and Xbox's major acquisition of Activision Blizzard. And I believe this is the first Call of Duty release since the acquisition has fully completed, gone through all the checks and balances. David, I know this is something that you've been paying particular close attention to. What impact do you think this is having on the overall gaming ecosystem and sort of Game Pass subscription access going forward?
In terms of Call of Duty itself, or for COD, I think it's probably going to be a good thing. I mean, for the health of the game, for the player count, I think it's going to look really, really good. I'm interested to know what the conversion rate's going to be. Are people going to log in through Game Pass as a cheap way to access what would be a full price game ordinarily, and then are they actually going to get in the store and spend money on those skins? They're going to need. I would be keeping your eye out over the coming 6 months to see how the content rollout for Black Ops 6 in particular, or maybe even Warzone, changes as they try and funnel more money into the game through Game Pass. The problem that we have seen for Xbox in the past is that when they put Game Pass is a great deal, people keep going for it because, you can get access to these brand new expensive games for much cheaper than you would just buying them outright. But that does come at the cost of really hitting Xbox's bottom line on unit sales. So, yeah, time's going to tell on this one. This is Phil Spencer's big gamble. He's made an awfully expensive acquisition specifically for this series. don't get it twisted. Like, Blizzard was a beautiful bonus, a healthy bonus on top of like the thing that he really wanted, which was Call of Duty at what was probably a steal, quite frankly. We'll see. We'll see. I do think it's one to watch. If you're an industry watcher like me, you're going to be paying attention to exactly how the numbers on this one shake out. Phil certainly going to be hoping it shakes out in his favor, because they've had a bit of a rough trot for a while now. It would be good to see this work out for Xbox. I think like those guys are ready to sort of get back in the ring and really take it to PlayStation in market. We'll have to see. That's my two cents for now. It's a little non-committal, but I do think there's a few data points there to keep your eye on.
I think if anybody listens to Walkthrough, they'll know my absolute disdain for the decisions that were made around Game Pass and the new tier system that they brought out just in time for Black Ops 6 to lock a lot of people out of it who can't afford the highest tier on console.
That's a good point.
Preface with that, I think it was an incredibly, incredibly grubby move. That aside, Game Pass for for PC for just $13, pretty impressive. That's a pretty good deal, I think, for anybody who at least wants to just dip their toes in it.
The value for the end consumer certainly is there. I'll be watching the next Microsoft financial report with great interest, that's for sure.
Yes.
So all of that being said, Kyle, do you drop or rate Call of Duty Black Ops 6 and why?
I definitely rate Black Ops 6. If you like Call of Duty, you know what you're getting, and this is an incredibly well-tuned, tight version of that.
David, what about you?
Do you know what? On the strength of the multiplayer alone, I think it's just squeaking over the line into a rate for me. Like, campaign, not there for me. It might be for you. Like, give it a go. It's on Game Pass, $13 for PC. Like, you know, like it's a cheap way to try it out. But for the strength of the multiplayer, yeah, I rate it.
Yeah, and I think Black Ops 6 has surprised me. It's a rate. There are some elements I'm not so crash hot on, particularly what we mentioned about the campaign. But above all, this does feel like Call of Duty back to doing what it does at its strongest.
Hey there, Gianni here. On the latest episode of Lightmap Sifter's interview podcast, I sit down with the developers of Civilization 7, who were recently out in Australia, and ask what it takes to build on this legendary series without losing what players know and love.
This Civ is a really big change to a lot of the formula, so at the same time, it still feels very much like a Civ game, and I think that it's one of those things where it's sort of, as you get into 7, if you think you don't like something when you read about it, I'd say give it a chance. And if you play it and you think you immediately understand it, give it a chance. Because there's some, you know, we like to talk about how some of the stuff is going to be more impactful than it may seem at first. So I just say stick with it and give it a few more turns.
You can get every episode of Lightmap for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or head to our website, sifter.com.au.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games.
You're listening to Sifter.
That is Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Does a lot of the things that Call of Duty is known for. The campaign, we're a little bit mixed on, but again, it's that really strong multiplayer that keeps us coming back. David, where can people find you and follow your work?
Oh man, I've got to like redo my whole outro spiel because I had one that I've done for so long. You can no longer find me at Kotaku Australia. I'm not there anymore. You can find me on socials at RuneWords. That's RHUNWORDS. You can find me on social around the traps using that handle. You can also find me on Patreon as well if you'd like to support the games journalism work that I'm doing. We've got lots of updates going on over there. Most of the time throughout the week now, I've just launched the Patreon. It's a very recent addition. Check it out. See if you like what we're doing. If you do, feel free to throw us a couple bucks. That'd be great.
Excellent. And if you don't subscribe, I'll visit your houses personally and make sure
he'll
that you do.
Do it. He's serious.
Kyle, where can people find you?
Just be sure to stay tuned, subscribe to the Walkthrough by Sifter podcast for all your gaming industry news that comes out every Sunday.
This has been Drop Rate by Sifter, our video game review podcast. Thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the theme music. And Sifter is produced by Chris Button, Courtney Smith, Kyle Poletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, and Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni Di Giovanni is our executive producer. That's all for this week. Follow Sifter on TikTok to keep up with the biggest stories in video games, and visit sifter.com.au for written coverage. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.